December 65 was the last time he was ever seen alive. The U.S. Army lies that caused him to decide to leave his old top sergeant and fight on the other side. Well, I wonder what was his name. I wonder from which town he came. I wonder if his children understand the reason why of the way he had to fight and the way he had to die. Was he lonesome for his homeland far away, fighting with his new companions night and day? In the base and jungle camps they tell about a man sharing hardships with his comrades fighting on the other side. Well, I wonder what was his name. I wonder from which town he came. And I wonder if his children understand the reason why of the way he had to fight and the way he had to die.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning, KBOO listeners. It's 10 a.m. on Friday, October 16th, 2020. Today we have a special program about the recent censorship of a San Francisco State University online panel by the Zoom Corporation. Before we get started, I'd like to remind all our listeners that KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive. Please support alternative, independent, volunteer-powered community radio by going to our website, kboo.fm, or the KBOO app and click on the Here For You banner. We aren't in the station to take your calls, but you can just show your support by giving online. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. You can also mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thank you so much to all our KBOO supporters for keeping the station strong in these trying times. Now on to today's program. إذا عدت يوما وشاحا لربك خذيني أمي إذا عدت يوما وشاحا لربك وغطي عظامي بعشب تعمدا من طهرك بخصلة شعر بخيط يلوح في ذيل ثوبك بخيط يلوح في ذيل ثوبك عساني أصير إلها إلها أصير عساني أصير إلها إلها أصير إذا.
Marcel Khalife with his song Ummi, which means my mother in Arabic. This morning we're bringing you a special program to talk about the recent censorship of a university panel on the issue of Palestine, and to put it in the larger context of censorship of Palestinian voices, perspectives, and narratives in the U.S. media. The panel was hosted by professors at San Francisco State University. In the 1960s and 70s, many people around the world were engaged in revolutionary armed struggle. Many of these are now revered and respected by people on the left in the U.S. These include people like Angela Davis, Asada Shakur, and Sundiata Okoli of the Black Liberation Army, Leonard Peltier of the American Indian Movement, and Daniel Ortega, who was a revolutionary with the Sandinista movement in Nicaragua, is now the president of that country. But Leila Khaled, who engaged in two plane hijackings in 1969 and 1970,
in which she did not kill or hurt anyone, has not achieved that same status. For some, she is considered a hero of the Palestinian struggle for self-determination. But for others, she is a pariah, a terrorist, who should not be allowed to speak because of her actions in 1970. So when the 76-year-old Khaled was invited to participate in an online panel from her home in Jordan, organized by a group of professors at San Francisco State University, she was not entirely surprised by the controversy that erupted. However, the unprecedented cancellation of an open classroom event by the Zoom Corporation that hosts online meetings for schools, businesses, and governments was surprising to the professors who organized the event. They were shocked and outraged that their private company would have the jurisdiction to make decisions about the content of their classroom lectures and events. And they're extremely concerned that the pandemic has given private companies the opportunity to censor university events, as universities have moved most of their teaching to these online platforms. Tomomi Kinukawa is a professor of gender studies at San Francisco State University. She was scheduled to co-moderate the panel that was censored by Zoom. She begins by talking about the preview sessions of the Open Classroom Initiative, a project which brings together university students and the general public to be able to engage in lectures and discussions together.
I have two big sessions in my intro class. So those students responded to these two open classrooms. Many of them expressed their indignation and frustration that they had never had a chance to learn about Palestine justice and Palestine feminism and Israel settler colonialism and its link to U.S. settler colonialism and so forth. And so many of them said that they really appreciated the kind of epistemic transformation that they went through. And then Lawfare Project, a Zionist law firm, submitted the document to the Department of Justice that is titled Unlawful Provision of Material Support to Designated Foreign Terrorist Organization by San Francisco State University, hinting that the open classroom could potentially violate the laws about the material support of terrorist organizations. I mean, also the president, she emphasized academic freedom for all. However, she didn't, but then she actually hinted at Leila Khaled as a terrorist. They all kind of reduced this whole webinar into this single issue about to an occasion to label Leila Khaled as terrorist, to criminalize the whole event. It really silences Dr. Abdul Hadi's really important work on her and other feminists in Palestine and also here.
The complaints submitted to the university administration claimed that this webinar featuring a former prisoner who was involved in armed resistance in 1970 would somehow constitute material support for terrorism were absurd on their face and also patently false from a legal perspective. But as lawyer Dima Khalidi points out, the complaints were meant to intimidate those involved in the event, even though the complaints were entirely groundless from a legal standpoint.
So we have a number of Israel lobby groups who were telling SFSU and Zoom and other big tech companies that this would be a criminal activity to allow Leila Khaled to speak to a class along with other internationalist activists. So we have a situation where Zoom and these big tech companies are in effect playing police here. They are they all of a sudden have veto power over what is discussed in a classroom or in a public forum. So it's a very troubling precedent that political lobby groups are trying to dictate what is okay and what is not okay to discuss on these platforms and in our university classrooms at a time when most of them are online on these platforms. So it's a very troubling incident, and it has huge implications for our First Amendment and academic freedom rights, and also for what it means that these companies have this much power to make these kinds of decisions. This is really the first time we've seen this happen on this scale, on this with this amount of publicity, certainly. And it's not new. Obviously, there have been a lot of conversations about what these the power that these companies have to censor different kinds of speech on their platforms. So this is really part of that conversation. Are these companies that are in effect playing the role of a public forum right now, especially during this pandemic, but are not subject to constitutional safeguards that protect our right to association, that protect our right to speech in normal circumstances, and in this modern age, of course, when so much of organizing, so much of association is happening virtually. This is not an isolated event. We're talking about a widespread campaign on the part of not only Israel lobby groups in the U.S., but the Israeli government itself to intimidate and silence people who speak out for Palestinian rights. And this is especially true on campuses because there has been such a vibrant movement by students and academics as well, talking about Palestinian rights and bringing these issues up. And so we see again and again, you know, I mean, this example of Leila Khaled is, of course, front page news because of who she is. But the fact is that Israel lobby groups are going after any and everyone who dares to raise this issue, who dares to criticize Israel's foundation on the dispossession, on the occupation of the Palestinian people, and to raise their experiences and their narratives. So, you know, one group that was involved in this particular case was an app, an Israeli-funded app that has people go on missions to, you know, complain to SFSU and to Zoom about this event. And they have these kinds of missions all over the country. So in Florida State right now, we see Florida politicians, this Israeli-funded app, telling people to complain to Florida State University about a Palestinian-American student who was elected to student government, to head the student senate. And in this case, you know, he tweeted years ago when he was a child living under occupation in the West Bank about the violence that he was experiencing. And so they're calling on FSU to, you know, take him out as the leader of the student senate. And it's a massive campaign against this the first Palestinian and Muslim student to lead this group. So, you know, we see this again and again where people who are trying to raise this narrative, who are merely, whose identity is Palestinian and who are sharing their experiences, are attacked and intimidated. We have, you know, profiles, sites that are dedicated to profiling people because of their views for Palestinian rights, and calling the FBI and their employers and their universities to try to smear them, to try to get them punished for their views. So it's a very troubling state of affairs right now. So this is a tactic that has been, this is part of a much broader effort to undermine a growing movement for Palestinian human rights, when the situation in Palestine has never been worse, when our own government is supporting the most extreme Israeli government and its annexationist agenda. And so we have to stand firm and insist that not only big tech companies, but also our universities hold firm to principles of free speech, of academic freedom right now, and allow us to have these conversations that question even the most entrenched orthodox, trying to keep this blackout of information about what's actually happening on the ground, what Palestinians live through every day. And that is, you know, there is a military occupation that has been going on for decades now, where Palestinians on their own land cannot move freely. There are military checkpoints between cities. People who live in the West Bank can't travel freely to the rest of historic Palestine. People in Gaza, Palestinians in Gaza, which is the most densely populated place on earth, have been under a military siege for over 10 years. They cannot go in and out. They cannot get medical attention. There have been multiple bombardments of Gaza that have destroyed its infrastructure. You know, the unemployment is at all-time highs. There is no infrastructure. You know, people are dying. So, and then in Israel itself, where over 20% of the population are Palestinian citizens of Israel, there is a system of laws that discriminates against Palestinians to the point where they are second-class citizens in their own land. So there is, you know, Israel itself was founded again on the dispossession of Palestinians. In order to make it a so-called Jewish state, they have had to remove Palestinians from their ancestral homes. And that has led to a refugee crisis for many decades. We have, you know, since 1948, millions and millions of Palestinian refugees still who cannot return to their homes as international law requires. You know, there are many people who understand this and who are trying to expose what is happening and to change our own government's policies of unconditional support to the government of Israel. We send billions a year, $3 billion a year in military aid and other aid to Israel. And we, in effect, you know, we subsidize Palestinian oppression. So it's a really critical conversation that needs to happen in the United States to inform people about what their tax dollars are doing and what we are supporting with our foreign policy.
That was Dima Khalidi with Palestine Legal. Dr. Rabab Abdulhadi was one of the professors that organized the webinar that was censored by Zoom. She says this is a dangerous attack on academic freedom. She was also disappointed by the university administration's response to the Zoom Corporation's censorship.
The good news is that the union has been amazing. The union has been advocating again and again. The executive board passed a unanimous resolution. There is a petition going on from the union and so on. However, other faculty are also very afraid of maybe they will lose their careers, maybe they don't get the promotion, maybe they won't get a grant or a fellowship they applied for, maybe there's going to be more retaliation against them, as I myself have experienced. I mean, this is also, the attacks happen for us on campus. We are always walking, looking over our shoulders. It's actually quite scary.
A recent article in The Intercept pointed out that this censorship by the Zoom video conferencing platform of the San Francisco State University webinar on Palestine is just the latest example of censorship of Palestinian voices. I spoke with the author of the article, Murtaza Hussein, who says that the anonymous nature of websites like the Canary Mission create a culture of fear among students and professors who speak out about Palestinian rights.
So the Canary Mission is a online blacklist of people who are accused of supporting Palestinian nationalism or being anti-Israel. Some of the accusations against people on the list include allegations, very unsubstantiated in most cases, that they are extremists or that they're bigoted or that they have ties to banned terrorist groups. And essentially what they do is they create dossiers on people. So the first thing that happens when someone Googles your name, unless you have, especially if you're a student who doesn't have a very big public profile, it's likely that your Canary Mission profile will be the first result. And it's essentially a very negative portrayal of the people who are listed on there, very uncharitable, negative portrayal. And essentially, it can make it hard to get jobs, it can make it hard to, you know, apply for an apartment. It can make it hard for anything that you might do in your life that would result in someone Googling you. It's essentially a intimidation tactic to prevent people from speaking out about this issue. Typically, what they do is that they take a person who they don't like, and then they extrapolate things they've said or events they've attended to draw these very, very sensational portraits of them as being supporters of groups or movements all over the world, or somehow just connecting them to these things. So if somebody, you know, a supporter of Palestinian nationalism or critic of Israel, they will write a profile which somehow spuriously and very tendentiously tries to link their statements with some group which is extremist or banned or so forth. And, you know, it's a very effective tool for people who don't know the subject very well. You can really cause problems for people who already are under a lot of scrutiny for other reasons related to their class or their gender or ethnicity or religious background. And, you know, it's a slur. It's basically a slur, and it has a political connotation. And for people like this who are more vulnerable anyways, being smeared in this way can push them away from free speech even more so than they had been before.
That was Murtaza Hussein with TheIntercept.com. Now, Leila Khaled did manage to participate in an online Zoom webinar not affiliated with San Francisco State University soon after the SFSU one was canceled. Here's a clip of Khaled talking about her childhood as a Palestinian refugee and what led her to become involved with the armed resistance in 1970.
Well, I think that after some coverage in the American Jewish press, some groups were forced to or compelled to withdraw their support for Canary Mission, who identified as being supporters of it. But it's like the whole puzzle has not been put together. So one major person who's believed to be funded is Adam Milstein, who's a conservative billionaire donor. And he's unlikely to be susceptible to communal pressure, you know, to defund from Canary Mission. And, you know, it's very excellent that the Jewish American press has been at the forefront of covering this, because many of them are very invested in liberalism, and this is a very illiberal project. And to the extent that can be exposed, some, if not all, people might be compelled to rethink their support for it.
That was Murtaza Hussein with TheIntercept.com. Now, Leila Khaled did manage to participate in an online Zoom webinar not affiliated with San Francisco State University soon after the SFSU one was canceled. Here's a clip of Khaled talking about her childhood as a Palestinian refugee and what led her to become involved with the armed resistance in 1970.
I was born in Haifa. Now I'm not allowed to go to Haifa. Somebody else is living in our house now. Those are the thieves of history. They are the Zionists who obliged my family to leave and to make my mother traumatized by the massacre of Deir Yassin, where the women were killed and their abdomens, the pregnant ones were killed by the Zionist militia at that time in 1948. My mother was afraid, so she wanted to take us from Palestine. I had a friend called Tamara. She was Jewish, but she was Palestinian also. I asked my mother, "Is Tamara going?" And she said, "No." I said, "Okay, I don't want to go because my friend is not going with us." So she said, "No, you have to go and then we will see." My mother took us. My father was with the revolutionaries at that time. We didn't know where he was. So my mother took us to Lebanon. On the way, I was seeing many women carrying their children, and they were crying all the way. My mother was crying. We also were. We were 8 children, and we were put in a small car. Yani, we were privileged that we had a car to go to go out. So they deprived us. When I say they, I related to the Zionists. And I'm not relating it to Jews, because the Jews were living with us in Palestine peacefully. So the Zionists who did all this catastrophe. I can't tell you, like other refugees, how was our life afterwards. It was a miserable life. Let me tell you, when I went to school, it was a tent. And in winter time, it fell over us. We were four classes in that tent. And then I went to my mother and said, I don't want to go to school. It's not a school, even though I didn't know what is a school. And then she said, no, you have to go to school to learn. And I said, what's the use of learning while we are not in Haifa? When we went to school, I never got a pencil. It was always half a pencil, half a copy book, half an eraser, because my mother used to cut things, the tools of learning, to half between me and my brother, and between my sister and other sister. This is the way we live, not like any other children at school. I used to ask this question, and I'm sure all the children who were driven out by force from Palestine were asking their parents, why we are living in tents? We had a house. We had a home there in Palestine. We had a field. We had a garden. The answer was, because we are refugees. The key for ending this conflict, the return of the Palestinians, the refugees, to go back to their homelands and properties. There, we can together, whoever accepts this solution, together to establish a democratic state in Palestine for all of us. Everyone is equal in rights and duties.
That was Leila Khaled, a 76-year-old former Palestinian resistance fighter who now lives in Jordan. You've been listening to a special program on the censorship of a San Francisco State University online panel by the Zoom Corporation, because the panel, in addition to a gender studies professor, an Arab studies professor, and two Jewish activists, had planned to include Leila Khaled as a speaker. We'll go out with the song Watani, sung by Fairuz.
Watani, Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning, everybody. This is DK Home with another episode of Film at 11. This week, we're going to hear from Matthew of KBOO's Gremlin Time and Jeff Godsell of the Essentials of Cinema website. But first, two movies that share a lot in common. Two recently released films both address issues arising in that still alive time, the 60s, 70s. The Glorias is about Gloria Steinem, journalist, feminist, and founder of Ms. Magazine. And The Boys in the Band is a restaging of the play for Netflix. They join other current and forthcoming 60s efforts, such as the TV show Mrs. America about anti-feminist Phyllis Schlafly, and the forthcoming film about the Chicago Seven.
Those are too big. They hide your beautiful face.
They're perfect.
Those women in bunny outfits are gonna thank you one day.
I have a fear of public speaking. What Dorothy and I have to say is too important not to say it.
This is the year of women's liberation.
A simple right to reproductive freedom is basic.
We're here to make revolution, not just...
The Glorias is directed by Julie Taymor of theatrical fame, and stars Julianne Moore as Gloria Steinem.